exciting episode of Baxter Featuring. Today I have not one, but two fabulous guests. One guy decided to be on my show for the first time ever. Welcome. Oh, hold on. Seymour, the unfortunate vampire. I have one great writer-director who does way too many films, Joe Kane. And for his first ever appearance, Clark.
Yeah, we decided to bring Clark along because he was a big part of this production. So
that's
thank
awesome.
Thank you for having us.
Since Clark is here, Clark, I love to discuss weird things. Your dad will even tell you. We can discuss the film, but they can watch it. It's easy to get to. But I like to discuss things. So I want to discuss your lighting setup of the opening shot.
On the opening shot.
So how was that to light for you? It's nighttime. It's dark.
All right. So I'm gonna take that over because he actually he wasn't on that shoot that particular night.
Oh, no, he wasn't.
good way to start out. Misfire, but that's okay. We actually set up the whole thing under a street light, believe it or not.
I was wondering that because you could see the light coming down.
Yeah.
And I was like, there has to be more lighting than just that. That there isn't.
We intentionally blocked it, and then what we did is we went around and we buried lights in all of the gardens that were surrounding, so there was some uplight coming from those. But you could actually see them in the scene. They kind of look like part of natural lighting that would be there normally. So that was one way that we were able to do that.
Yeah, because you come with, I would say, a very low light to start off your film, and then as it gets brighter, and I wanted to get into that, so that's how you got it brighter for me. Because I was like, wow, this shot gets so bright as it goes on.
Yeah, yeah. It was a matter of blocking. So, like, when the actual dialogue and things like that took place, that we had us in the appropriate spots. You know, a lot of using the street light that was there. And it had that yellowish sort of hue to it. So we adjusted all the lights to that yellow hue and said, this is what we're rolling with. It's the beauty of indie film. We said, you know what? We're not going to put out 50,000 lights. We're going to use this little light that's here on the street.
But if it works for you, why would you not use it as an indie director? I mean, to me, you guys have $5,000 for the sake of my argument. And if you can find something that's free to use, use it.
Well, that's the nature of being an indie filmmaker in general, is going, hey, what can we use? How can we use this? Where can we... can we just move actors over a few feet and use a natural light that's there? Or can we, bring in the least amount of lights that we possibly need to? You know what I mean? It's like whatever it happens to be, we're trying to cut corners. We're trying to save a couple dollars and put the money towards things that are honestly more important.
That
lighting is not important. Don't get me wrong. That's a key part of everything that's going on. So, not having them stand in the exact spot that you wanted. Okay, we'll move over 5 feet to the light.
Yeah, and that's a good thing that you said, like how you have to like match the light to the natural light.
Yeah,
because if you have like two different shades, it's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
So Clark, as your dad is a director, and your dad as your dad, do you find a difference?
Like on set, you're saying.
On set. I mean, I understand your dad's got a job. I mean, he's got to make this film. And you're his son, so you know what buttons to hit. When you're ready to hit one, you can hit it.
Yeah, I mean, it's different because he doesn't treat me, like, any differently than anyone else. But, like, if he has a problem, he knows that he could yell at me.
Wow! So, like,
as an actual, like, person behind the scenes, he treats me like anyone else. But if there's, like, a problem, he knows that he could, like, get a little mad.
Wow, getting really behind the scenes here.
That's what I want to hear. Let's get into it. So as you're filming this, I noticed that you spend more time outside than normal in most of your scenes. I mean, there are house locations, stuff like that. Did you work that into your script going, you know what? I can do this on a smaller budget than my last one, or maybe it is the same budget. Because I noticed that you had more of an expansive universe in this film than you did in your first film.
This was definitely a larger budget. This was almost, Almost about six times larger than what we had.
Really?
In the other film. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We had a lot more, and a lot of that was being able to bring in some notable actors like Marshall Teague, Tanya Kaye, Brimstone, Kimberly Adragna, and a couple other people. Jacqueline Rial, who was Karina. Being able to bring them in and to be able to work on this, you know, our budget was a little higher, and there were a lot more characters, and there were a lot more of a lot more setups and locations and things like that that we were focusing in on being able to go, okay, where can we go and what can we do? And we spent a lot of money just acquiring locations, to be honest with you, with a lot of this, because it was important to tell the story. Now, that also gets down to when you get on location, do I have to set up 50 lights? Do I have to take an extra 2 hours to light the scene appropriately? Or can I move it over, like you said in the beginning, to under the street light and be able to use that and just throw up a couple of, spot things to fill shadows? So, it is important to spend the money wisely, because it wasn't – listen, the last feature which you interviewed me on, which is about Director's Cut, he was in that too. He played the kid that I kicked in the face.
Yeah.
That was his first notable role.
I always seem to get beat up in these.
Yeah, yeah.
You're cheap, buddy. You're a cheap actor.
Hey, Clark, come to the set today.
I like working with my family. I like working with my son. My daughter is in both of the movies also. You've seen my brother is also – he's the big tall guy, the fairy. He plays Lark. I mean, it's my immediate family and everybody else. We're all involved in this. So, that's kind of the nature of indie filmmaking, is grabbing the people around you and the people closest to you.
And the good thing about, like, having people like that who are willing to do it is, like, some people have, like, unique, like, things at their house or something that you could film the scene at.
Well, that was the other thing. We acquired some locations and things from friends and family, and we were like, okay, we can film at this person's house, or we can film at this there was a bar scene in there that was somebody that was a good friend of ours.
We'll get there.
The bar.
I promise. We'll get there.
I jumped the gun. I've gone too far. We're still on the opening scene, so.
Well, you know me. I don't really go into films. I like to discuss making and stuff, so.
Yeah.
You can go to any scene you want. You can just jump wherever you want. I've seen the film. Okay, since you guys want to get locations, let's go to locations. That bar location, like, that's different for you. Like, that was a little more expansive, I would say, for the first film.
Sure. One of the more complicated scenes to wrangle everybody. We had over 50 extras, and we had a band.
And the makeup.
Yeah, we had four. Was it? We were trying to figure this out the last time. There was four and an assistant. So really, five people doing makeup on set, because everybody was done up like ghouls and goblins and whatever else, and all crazy sort of things. And a lot of it's in the background, so it's quick flash by things, and you go, oh, look at that! Like, it's on a second and third watch. You go, okay, there's that. So, you know, it was a very complicated scene to put together. 2 weeks after we used that bar, they used the same exact bar in The Punisher, the TV series, The Punisher. And they used literally the same bar, and they broke it up. That was like, but it was more, I think they broke up things that they brought in to break up, but
you'd hope.
I would hope. Yeah. No, I'd been in there afterwards, and it was all together. But same bar that they used in the Punisher series.
That's good. So, Clark, when you're working on a set, how do you feel? Like, do you go around the school and go, "Look, I'm on a set today, guys. I'm in a film," or do you keep it to yourself?
I mean, I keep it to myself in general, but in school, there's a movie writing class and a movie making class.
Really?
It's called the, script to screen. So basically, it's like we have to write, like, it's a short movie, but like a 10-minute movie. And so I tell some of my friends in that class, and I think, and like, it becomes a lot better when you actually, like, know what you're doing. And then those people know, and I think a couple of them have even watched. I know Director's Cut. I'm not sure about this yet.
Interesting. Okay, I want to go back to locations for a bit.
Okay.
I wrote an AVS store. I'll leave it at that since your son's here, but you probably know what I'm talking about.
Adult video store. He's seen the movie.
Okay, I didn't know, so I just tried
to... He wasn't there for that shoot either, but...
I didn't think he would be, but you never know. I didn't know these still existed.
So, you know what's funny is that was... we were looking for... because that was a part of a whole montage. And while we were doing the montage, we were literally driving to another place. We were driving past it, and we looked over, and we said, wouldn't it be funny if he was applying to – it was literally spur of the moment as was driving by. And we went and shot at the place that we shot at, and we said, let's just go back and see if we can shoot. And the way it worked was we went back, and they just shot me walking up and walking into the store. The second part was actually shot months later when – Wayne, one of my business partners, went back there and he said, hey, you know, is there any chance we could shoot in here? And I said, yeah, sure. It was as simple as that. There was nothing, no exchange, nothing. It was just, yeah, sure. When do you want to come in? And then we went back a few weeks later and shot that.
That's
funny.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a happenstance that we happened to be driving by it, and I said it would be kind of funny if he was applying at an adult video store.
I just thought that was very funny to me that they still existed. I do want the funeral home. That's a real funeral home, is it not?
That is a real funeral home.
Okay.
Okay. Are you asking how we acquired it or what?
Yes, I want to know. Like, I mean, people do die regularly, and sometimes it's very quickly, and they need the home tomorrow.
So what was written in the script was a funeral home that they were going to buy him a coffin. They were going to buy Seymour a coffin. I'm trying not to spoil anything, but you know, he is a vampire, so
I'm not spoiling anything. We're just discussing something.
They go to the funeral home was what was written in there, and Wally climbed into a coffin. So, One of the extras in the bar scene, her husband is a funeral director.
Okay.
And we happened to just be talking, and Wayne was actually talking to her, and he says, "Hey," she goes, "Oh yeah, what do you do?" Blah 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 blah, just small talk. And he says, "My husband is a funeral director." And she goes, "Oh, it's funny. We were looking for a funeral home to shoot in." She goes, "Let me ask him." And it literally went like that. The only thing was, you're not allowed to lay in the coffins, which was written in the script. So we went, okay, so how do we get around that? You know, it's getting locations like that and things that you're like very, very grateful for. And you go, oh, this is really cool. You know, somebody, you obviously saw it and it like popped with you and you were like, hey,
yes,
they have a funeral home. Like, you can't go shoot in a funeral home normally. Obviously, we weren't allowed to go in where any of the mortician work.
No, I didn't think you would be, but that's
or anything
fine.
Like that. But we were allowed to go in because they actually have a showroom where coffins
that's
are
where
sold.
That's what I thought you were.
And that's literally what it was. And that little office outside that room is also part of that place. Yeah, so it was, again, another luck of the draw. Now, the Baggerty thing was all done in post-production because it said Baggerty Funeral on the front of the place, and that was actually a different building, believe it or not, at the front visage that you were looking at. And then we went in, and the stuff inside, there were all pamphlets printed out for Baggerty Funeral and all that. And all of that was done in post-production with, CGI. To make the signs and everything look like they were on the building.
And I mean, it's sometimes it's like hard to like have like, cause you our goal. The goal was to get a funeral for it, but then there's restrictions, and then sometimes you have to change your script and stuff, which gets like difficult. But like for a circumstance like that, it was just like this one rule, and then there's other like sets that you have to improvise on because of restrictions. So like the final set, even like, yes, there's always some improv in a movie with like characters just saying like funny lines or something, but people don't realize how much of like actions are also changed.
Yeah. By the surroundings.
By the restrictions.
Clark, the way you speak, did you rewrite your dad's script and he just sort of read it afterwards?
I'm just going to say it flat out. everybody on my set, Clark is there, and he spent a good time behind the camera. And then he played one of the characters, obviously. Agent Phillip. Yes, I was just trying, just all of a sudden my mind went blank. What was the name of his character? And he, you know, he gives input, and he's kind of helps us out and gives his point of view on stuff. And it's sometimes when people tell you, hey, you should do it this way or should do it this way, it's kind of intrusive, and it's sometimes from a point of a direction that, hey, I think it should be this way. And Clark chimes in a lot of times, and I'll give him a lot of credit for that. He chimes in and goes, hey, what do you think about this? This is another point of view, you know, and he's very, he delivers his view on something very eloquently. So we all appreciate that, and we love having him on set.
Okay. Big question, Clark. How's your dad's acting?
I'll walk away for a minute.
Yes.
It's awesome, and the thing about, like, him being an actor-director makes a huge difference, because the thing about actor-directors, and especially with him, like, being a scriptwriter and, like, a screenwriter in all of it, is he gets to kind of, like, choose his character. He doesn't see the... He didn't see this Seymour guy in the script and try to make himself Seymour. He tried to make Seymour him, which was, it's awesome to see.
So why are you writing this then, Joe? Like, yeah. How does that work? Are you Seymour at this time where you're writing, or you don't think about that yet? You're just like, I have an idea. I'm going to write it out. Oh, my son might be doing this, and I'll put a little note. I get that. So how do you envision your whole thing ahead of time?
So here's the way this worked. This was in production over the course of 7 years.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. All your films are like this. What's the last one long to?
The last one's in production for about a year, a little over a year.
Okay. I do so many of these, I apologize. You know,
no, it's okay. Don't apologize.
I do too many of these. I'm like, did you know? Now I remember where the other film, that was 13 years, the other one I'm thinking of.
So this one was in production about 7 years, and the original concept for it was I wrote a full screenplay. I went to one of my partners and I said, hey, what do you think of this concept? And he goes, what's the concept? And I said, Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire. And he goes, we're doing it. And I went, well, it was still in, like, infancy stage at that point.
You didn't even, like, have a pitch together.
Yeah, no, we didn't have anything
you
together.
You just said a title.
I said a title, and he goes, we're doing it. That's the best title I've ever heard. And I'm like, okay, all right, let me go work on it. And we went to a film festival with some short films. It was a short film festival. And we said, you know what? Let's just, at the end of the short films, let's make a faux trailer for Seymour. And that faux trailer is actually up on YouTube. You can check it out. And that faux trailer, we tagged it on the end that went up on the big screen. And everybody went, when is Seymour getting done? So we were like... Okay, I get, and it was like, you know, 35 seconds of footage that we kind of scrambled together to go into this festival. And you know, from there, I had written a full-length feature intended, like we ended up having here. We ended up shopping for budgets and things like that, and trying to get people and everything involved after we had the full script written. And it turned out we got a lot of people who were going to agree on a short term, meaning, hey, we'll come in, but we can't do like a full blown whatever. So we said, okay, so we're going to break this up and make it into a web series. Oh. And we actually wrote out and shot 8 separate episodes of a web series. And when the web series – by the time we finished the web series, we had attended the American Film Market that following like month in November. I think we shot over the summer, and by that November we went to Film Market. And we said, hey, we got this web series. It's in the can. We just have to edit it and put it together. And they looked at us and they went – everybody went, no. There's nothing you can do with a web series. It'll die. It's over if it's a web series. And we said, okay, what's your suggestion? So then we went and we cut it back together on the suggestion from the people from the American Film Market, which, by the way, is one of the biggest, like, that's where you make your sales for your films and television shows, American Film Market. It's in California each year. They said that a pilot for a television series is more valuable than a web series. And we said, okay. So we went back and we then it turned out to be end up being after organizing everything. It was almost a year later and we shot all of the tie togethers, the things that sewed it together to make it into a 44-minute pilot, TV pilot. Okay. You know, in that 44-minute format. And we said, okay. then we got a call from our distributor that we were working with. Hey, we'd be interested in this thing as a full-length feature.
Okay. So I'm going to stop you for a second and keep going. So we're starting with a web series is what I understood.
Started with a
web series. How many episodes?
8 episodes. They were about 7-minute episodes.
So that's 56 minutes a movie.
Correct.
Does it have the end done?
It didn't have the end done. No, it was up in the air because it was clocked out to be, you know, a continuing series.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure. Okay, yes. I understand it being done. Web series, I think, are not the way to go for anybody.
Oh well, I'll just say that now. Yes.
No, I'm telling you ahead of time. Please don't do web series. I mean, I'll watch them.
Yeah,
but I think movies are the way to go, or do the web series and then make it a movie.
Correct.
And that's what I thought. Okay, so then you got this, and then you made a pilot out of it for TV.
For TV, correct.
So where's TV?
Shopped it to Sci-Fi Channel. We shopped it to
CW. Okay.
Thank
you.
We shopped it to a couple of the bigger ones. We shopped it to streaming platforms, and we couldn't get the. It turns out it's going to be very expensive in the long run to continue a series like this, and we couldn't get the gamble for us. They were like, hey, we can't spend that amount of money to continue the series. So a little bit down the road, a few years later, we pick up the series again. We say, hey, we're going to now turn this into a full-length feature, which is what it was originally intended with. And here we are, 7 years after we started this, finally releasing this onto Amazon Prime.
Okay, I'm going to back this up just a tiny bit more. If you were not the lead actor, this would not
have been
work.
Able to do it.
That's what I'm thinking. This would not work.
This was all a fancy way to answer your original question.
No, it's
how did
great.
I become Seymour?
I'm learning. I'm getting it.
So in the invention of not invention, what's the word I'm looking for? The conception of
I've no
English works sometimes for me.
Sometimes
with the conception of going, well, we're going to be shooting this, and we saw that it was going to be longer and longer and longer. We got to put someone in the main spot of Seymour that's going to be there all the time. Who's going to be there? Who's going to be there every single time?
And
so I said, well, I'm going to be writing it and directing it. I'm going to be there. So that's kind of by default, I ended up in that character.
Fascinating. That was a really good story. And I even had one location I had to ask about. I'm going to go back to it now.
Sure.
There's a room with a bed with a weird picture on the wall, like a diagram or illustration. What is that?
I don't know what the illustration is.
You know what I'm talking about? Because I paused it. I'm looking at this
one. Is that where Seymour's changing?
Yes.
That's the one I'm that's what I thought you were referring to. Okay, so that is literally my Wally's, the character Wally, his actor, that's his bedroom.
Okay. I just wanted to know what that was.
I don't know. He's not here for me to. He was almost here. He was actually supposed to come tonight and you know,
no
push
problem.
Came to shove. I was trying to get him here, but life popped up, unfortunately. But yeah, that's a picture above his bed.
I
don't know what the picture is.
So Clark, working on two films now, and having a film studies class of some kind, or do you make films? You said yes, you make films.
Well, it's like shorts, like little shorts.
That's fine.
It's
that
like,
they count.
It's like getting us into doing stuff in the future.
Do you feel working on these films has helped you in those classes become a stronger filmmaker?
Definitely. Like, there's,
You can't lean so far with
there's
my...
some instances
first interview.
Where, like, in film class, so basically we just started to, like, learn how to use our editing software, so it's, like, getting us into all the different parts of filming, because some people want to be actors, some people want to be editors, some people want to be producers, some people want to be screenwriters, so they actually, like, introduce us to all the things first, so that we did, like, a tiny short that, like, was just a little mini project about, like, it was just a little, like, fight scene that we did, and it helped, like, I got 100 on it, because...
I would not be surprised.
That's
a good experience.
It's a lot with the camera work that helps, because some people will just sit there, because we use our phones to record in this class, so some people will just sit here like this, right? And if someone goes to, like, punch or something, because the instance that we did was, like, a fight scene, they would just do this. But it's all about the camera and how you have to come across and stuff like that, which really helps.
I'm going to help Clark out a bit. This is an audio show, so I'm going to help you out a bit. What he's demonstrating, people, is showing a fight scene.
He's punching like this.
Yes, he's punching across as opposed to an angle shot. There you go.
But, like, you can't punch across with the camera, like, coming, like, with the camera, like, with the punch. Like,
gotta find the right angles.
The punch. You have to, like, find it correctly, and it just makes that easier.
And these are all things that he's gotten to experience and do
on set. Stuff, because even some of the actors that we've brought in, like, you kind of, like, almost train them to become stuntmen and stuff.
Yeah.
So
again, lower budget. We're doing a lot of things, but we've got to do that.
Sorry, I do have one more location. I forgot your supermarket. Did you gorilla shoot that?
100%. Actually, okay. I wasn't even there for that. Wayne, who played Wally, him and his brother literally grabbed the camera. They said, "We're gonna go do this. We'll be right back." I said, "What?" And they literally ran into a supermarket and shot that.
Which is fine with me. I don't care. Okay, moving on. I'll give you an option, Clark. Do you want to discuss digital effects or music?
Digital effects.
Okay. How did you feel about working with digital effects? I mean, I see a lot more work you doing digital effects than I did the first film.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a lot of effect shots. I want to be honest. There are minor times, but they are there. I want, just so people know, I was working with CGI, or did you get a chance to, Clark? Or is it all your dad?
It was mostly him. But for some of the things, like, I witnessed how to do it and stuff. Like, with, like, different, like, things and snapshots that, like, you have to put in and then all that.
Side of it. Like, how do you set up the green screens? How do you set up that?
Yeah, and one of the most difficult things about green screening is lighting the set with the green screen. Because to not have, like, a shadow on the green screen behind is so helpful. Because if you have a shadow, a green screen and, like, a blue screen... a green screen and a blue screen have, like... You, like, crop out that color. And that's obviously why you can't wear, like, green on a green screen. Because it basically just crops out that color. So, if you have a shadow, it's going to be differed to, like... the background, which makes it a lot more difficult, and then you can go back and take it out, because, like, CGI-ing, like, behind the scenes is a lot more difficult to do, and you need to be precise to make it well, but it's more important to make sure that you do it well first.
Yeah, get in camera what you need to get done, and that was part
make
of
it easier for you.
Him being on camera, he was on the side of that. I was doing most of the stuff on the computer. That way. that English be good. I was doing the stuff on the computer while he was there for the practical side of how do we get this in camera? What do you need? And he asked a lot of great questions like, how do you need this? What do you envision? What needs to be here? What needs to be done? You know, we were sliding in, we bought just a Roland green screen, because we had complicated green screens to set up, and this was just a pop-up, boom, and that would 90% of the stuff we green screened on this particular show was all done with this pop-up that took about, I don't know, 30 seconds to set up and break down.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm not complaining there.
And I just want to add one thing to that of like the practical part of it is, I'll say, like during green screening, you can't just throw up a green screen, take the shot how you want it, and then just go. You have to get a before shot too, because you have to make it look like there's actually something in the background. Because some people will just be like, oh, it's simple. You just have to put a green screen up in the background, which for some circumstances works.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure for your podcast. Right now you have a green screen background.
It's really easy. It was $15 on Amazon.
There's no green shirts in your podcast if you ever wear, I'm sure.
Every once in a while I will accidentally put one on.
Oh yeah.
And I'll be honest, like, oh crap, and go upstairs to change. But okay.
I've done it.
We've all done it. I want to discuss the film. You have some larger people in this film than you do in your other film. Mm-hmm. And I mean large. I'm a tall person.
Yeah.
These people were large. Was that something you were after?
Particularly in the bar scene, like some of the extras and stuff.
The funeral home man looked very tall.
He's a bit. That was by fluke. I had never met him. That's James Armstrong is his name. He's a theater actor. This was the only film he's ever been in. He's never been in any other film, and I saw some footage of him acting in the film, on stage rather, and I went down to one of the productions he was doing, and introduced myself. I said, "Hey, look, I'm looking for somebody with a deep baritone sort of timbre that could play this part or whatever. Would you be interested in coming down to audition?" And he did. He came down and auditioned, and he got the part. It just happened to be that he was a huge, big, tall guy. But I mean, you've seen my brother. You saw my brother in Director's Cut. Now he's Lark in this, and my brother kind of dwarfs people, so we had to get big people to just keep in camera shot, to be honest with you.
You're big bad. Can I say that? I don't think I'm ruining anything calling him the big bad.
Yeah.
He does not look small to me either. Maybe he's not as tall as the other people, but his presence is large.
He's not as tall as some of the other guys, but his presence is definitely large. He's a former wrestler. And he's a radio personality.
That makes a lot more sense.
That's Brimstone. He's the Grindhouse Radio. He's the host of now, and he does all sorts of appearances and stuff for being a professional wrestler in the past. And he does a lot of acting too. And voiceover. He does a lot of voiceover.
He's got a nice voice. I did notice that was coming out.
Yeah. So I mean, he's got a presence though, like an unbelievable presence.
Yeah, and I mean that's like for someone like me who was behind the camera. For a lot of it, it's difficult to get, like, some people in the shot together, like Lark, his brother, the fairy. He's obviously gigantic. He's super tall.
He's 6'6".
Yeah, so,
I mean, this film's got large people in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get it in with someone, like, there's a scene where I'm near him right now. I'm still young, so, I mean, I'm tall for my age, but I'm, like, 5'7". So 5'7" and 6". Yeah, I'm only 12.
That's why I said you're pretty tall.
I'm tall, but still, like, 5'7" and 6'6" is a big difference to, like, have to get on
in one frame.
It's a lot harder because you could do the approach where you go down more, but you don't want to, like, be pointing to the ceiling, so that makes it a lot more difficult. But one thing to do is, even if they're in the same frame, kind of have, like, a like a wide standard, because if you have a wide, and then you can do like close-ups and stuff, which makes it a lot easier.
Oh. Okay, Clark, you kind of were nice to your dad before. Special effects or music? Your dad does love music.
Yeah.
So, music teacher. And if I don't discuss music, he'll get upset. So nothing against you. You might have to be quiet for a couple minutes, unless you want to interject your dad discussing music. Music for your film. I know you love it, so I'm letting you go.
Okay. You have a specific question about the music for the film, or
loved
in general?
It. Great variety of music. I got to say, I always enjoyed the music in your film. I thought this one had a different variety than the last one. And I liked it. I don't know what you were going for, but it all seemed to be working for me.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's a very hodgepodge, random stuff. I found that it works for me.
It's a very random amount of stuff that we put in there. We have actual, like, I think I told you last time, we do use Artlist a lot for a lot of things, but we also had actual artists on this one, which were the band that you saw in there. The band's actually called Bad Mary. You can actually see it on their drum skin in the movie. And they're out there playing. They're actually playing right now down the block from my house here. Yeah, I kind of said, oh, I should go and see them. But you know what? I'll give them a plug on your show. Go see Bad Mary if you haven't seen them yet. But yeah, they're an excellent band. And the two... The lead singer and the bass player are married, and they played Heap and Jessica in the film.
Oh!
So, yeah. So that was actually their band. And that's them performing in the club there in that scene.
Okay, Clark, you ready? I'm going to give you some questions that your dad will guarantee I would normally ask.
Okay.
The aerosol can, what is in it?
The hairspray?
Yeah, the hairspray that I spray on you. I'll take over because you can't have dead air on a podcast.
And I don't edit well, so I don't edit. I try not.
The hairspray can was a can of canned fog. It's the same stuff that we use on set just to spray stuff. I just printed out a label, and I put the label on it, and it said it had all sorts of vampire references and stuff on the label. I don't know if you saw it up close, but
it looked like it had writing on it. I'm like, what is that?
Oh, it definitely did. We printed up labels. We had three cans with three separate labels, so I don't remember which one was in the actual shot. But every label was different. I kind of went to town to make the labels for this thing. But I got that off of live productions of Hairspray. That's what they use in live productions of Hairspray in theater.
I had no idea.
And there's other circumstances where he did that. Is that it? The whiskey bottle thing?
Oh, yeah, that's from Director's Cut.
Well, no, it was in...
This was in Director's Cut. This was a whiskey bottle, but we reprinted the label. And I guess, you know, for our listening audio fans out there, we have our company label on it. Our company logo is on it.
I can see it.
It says, this must be drunk. Oh, no, that was in this.
Yeah, that was in it.
That was in this. Brim was pouring this. Yeah, that's right.
That's what I was saying.
This is whiskey, and it has the whole speech that that Brimstone actually spoke on it, printed onto the back of the label about the whiskey and barrel stuff.
So... creative ways to not get like yelled at by companies for having their thing in your movie.
Yeah, you have to be careful about product placement and things in there. So you don't want to, we try to cover up as much as you can when they're in the shot.
Yeah, like you can't really like walk onto a set with a Spider-Man shirt on and expect it to just be like, okay, yeah.
Well, you're wearing a Mets jersey, but yeah. I wore a Joe Kane shirt.
No. There you go, people. Go to Joe Kane Productions and buy some shirts. So, Clark, in the dinner scene, who cooked all the food? Was that you?
No. It was not me.
That was Zags. It's a, you know, we had a whole meal brought in, and that was our catering for the day. And we said, okay, we just took plates full of the catering, and everybody ate who was at that.
Okay, Clark, here's a question. Since your dad knows what you eat, and he's already informed me you're a fussy eater. On set meals, do you actually get what you like?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, we get, bagels and stuff and, little things like that. And, sometimes we go out to eat, too. We've gone out to eat, which is nice.
I'm a big proprietor of, when we're on set and we're doing stuff, we need a break to get away. So if the cast for the day is not, 50 people like it was in the bar there, like we talked about, I would prefer to go, okay, let's wrap a little early, or we're moving locations. We did a lot of moving locations in this. So we would have a midpoint break point, and then, okay, we'll meet at this place and we'll sit down and have a meal.
Awesome.
I would rather take an hour to go sit down and have a meal. In transit, we plan on some place. Okay, this is in between this setup and this setup. We'll meet here. We'll eat together, and then we'll go. That way, anybody can order whatever they want.
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to give, a certain circumstance where, I specifically remember that. I don't know where we were coming from, but we were coming from somewhere back to this house to shoot, one final scene, and we bought, six pies of pizza for the people who were on set that day, which was nice. Pizza's very good.
I remember sitting at my kitchen cabinet with Marshall Teague, Ethan Martin, I don't think Tanya was there that day. There was everybody who was on set for that day came back to my house afterwards, and we just sat around and had Chinese food.
Yeah.
And there's pictures on the internet circling of Marshall sitting at my kitchen cabinet at my kitchen island eating Chinese food.
Okay. I don't know if you filmed this, Clark, but I'm going to ask. In your first film, you let the action roll out more, I would say. I feel I'm getting a little bit longer acting scene.
Sure.
This is probably my one little tiny criticism. This is just me personally being honest.
Go for it.
I found the action was a little too quick cut for me. I wanted longer action scenes. So that's just a personal thing I enjoy. Don't care if you put it in your film or not. That's something. So, yeah. Clark, how do you feel about filming action?
It's the most fun thing to film. Especially, for some things, I'm not going to say specific moments in the films, but, if someone has to, fall over or something, and then you have pads on the floor and stuff, and it's just fun because you get to, not roughhouse a little bit, but you get to, be in the moment, and it feels like, even when if you're acting it, it feels a little, step by step, but filming it and seeing it all come together is very cool because, you get to see, the ways that these are made, and then you have these high action stuff, and it's fun to film, it's fun to act because you get to move around more. Sometimes scenes will be just me and my dad talking, hey, how's your day going? Obviously that's not a scene from the movie really, but stuff like that. It's very fun on set to be able to do action, and especially when it's in a controlled environment where nobody gets hurt at the end is awesome.
So you're not getting the same question, but it'll be a similar question. Did you find when you write this, you wanted to keep it more as a comedy? I mean, you could classify this as an action comedy, but I personally feel that'd be stretching. So would you classify this as a straight comedy?
It's classified as a horror comedy was its original kind of intent. And it kind of morphed as we went. I'm the type of director and writer, and I'm open to suggestions. And what happens is sometimes we get a little suggestion. We get a suggestion from you. We get a suggestion from this one and that one. There's a scene where the two vampire hunters, who are played by Tanya Kaye and Ethan Martin, are interrogating the vampire that they caught. So during that scene, what happened was they gave me all the lines that I wrote. And I said, you know what? Let's go a couple more takes. And we took a couple more takes, and I said, go to town. Let's improvise. And those two have such a chemistry. It's ridiculous. And they were able to come up with these sort of quips coming back and forth, and the whole thing about your wood is too soft and all this was them improvising. It comes out.
Oh, okay.
And I'm open to that, which will shift the tone of things sometimes. And also, shooting a film over 7 years and changing the format of it three times tends to kind of put that sort of it has that sort of feeling like it's moving and it's going, you're seeing it go this way and then it takes a left turn. because we're able to go in and craft it a little more and go, okay, let's try this now. Let's try this. And some of the, you know, I just saw an interview with Sean Levy, who just did the Deadpool and Wolverine movie. And he also did Free Guy. You know, that's kind of the process that they go through. And I love that sort of freedom on set. I want to be able to capture a moment that's funny, a moment that strikes you funny. That's that. So for what we were going for this, we were looking for like the horror aspect of it, having the vampires and the warlocks and the werewolves and things like that. So that's that horror sort of element. And it was trying to say, hey, this is the reality of it. He's still got to go get a job.
Yes.
You know, he loses his day job because he can't go out during the day anymore.
No, he can't. He tried.
So there's a lot of, to me, that was the comedy. And it was, I wasn't going, and at no point were we going for like slapstick sort of comedy.
No, definitely not.
But we were going for that little like chuckle to go like, oh my God.
It happens. It's there. It's there.
That's an awesome thing, like, when you direct, is, like, you let them, like you said, you let them put their spin on the character, because it's a lot harder to get fun out of a scene when it's people, like, reading off of a piece of paper.
Like, yeah, I agree. That,
they have to be natural, and it has to be, like, in the heat of the moment kind of funny.
That's why you enjoyed my podcast, because it's heat of the moment. It's fun. I let you guys roll. Simon Jones, a real person.
Simon Jones is not a real person. However, we had contemplated putting a real name in there for that.
Okay.
But no, it's not. It was
I just had to ask because I'm based. Okay, the band with the band, the lighting. Your sound is loud. That's the first time in the film I thought the film was loud.
Oh, because of the band playing.
Yes.
Okay, so
I want to know. I'm going to
go ahead. Go. Sorry, I'm being rude.
A tiny bit more. I want to discuss the lighting of that shot, uh-huh. And I also want to discuss the sound of that shot. And I think you did two different shots for that. So explain if I'm right or wrong, or break that down for me.
So the conversation on the side, that was all lit and done separately.
That's what I thought.
And then we went back. I mean, we had extras there for that, but that was done much earlier than the rest of the piece. And then the extras were all brought in. To be there in the background and to be a part of the band. So we actually shot that scene with Marshall and I talking in the bar while people were getting made up on the side.
Okay, that makes
sense. The extras were kind of coming in quiet. It's like, shh, they're literally in the middle of a scene, and they're getting made up on the side, and then we had a couple people in the background moving and doing stuff. And then we came back to the wider shots with people dancing and people in rocking out to the band. The band wasn't actually playing. So
okay. So the song is afterwards then. Okay, that's
the song we went back in, and yes, it's layered over our conversation.
That's what I'm getting at.
To fit back in.
You understood the question.
We recorded it quietly with just the dialogue scene, and then we layered over the band over it. So, oh, you were looking how we did the live band in the background, is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so yes, we recorded the dialogue separately, and then we just layered over the sound of the band playing in the background.
Okay, and lighting in that scene, you had two different light shots then, too.
Yeah, so the lighting was set up for the dialogue, and then the club itself has a lighting set up for the stage.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
So, again, getting back to the street light and using the available lights that were there, we literally went in the back and turned the lights on for the stage, and they came on like that. It's one of the most wonderful things on the planet. However, as you know, or anybody knows who's been out and frequented a bar every now and again, lighting in a bar is very dark. So every part of the bar that was shot besides the stage had to be lit. So we had probably, I want to say 20 to 30 fixtures in there lighting up that bar in different directions and different sort of capacities, different colors. It was in a bar, it was supposed to be dark and dingy, so we had a red light over here and we had a yellow light over here, and you know, it was all case by case as each scene kind of unfolded. We had decided that the bar, when you're up by the bar, it's going to be lighter than in the back, like where we had our dialogue, that's supposed to be dark and like we're kind of talking in the back.
Yeah, and I mean, that's tough when you have to put like a lot of different like lightings to light up like a dark set, because like a club like naturally has a lot of just like dark lighting, so you have to like make sure you're keeping the lighting out of the shot and stuff, which is, it's difficult, but it looks really nice when it all comes together.
Okay, because I could ask more questions, but I'm going to stop here. We're going to go to fun questions, but you're going to get a bonus one because, Clark, you haven't been on the show before.
Ah.
So you get the an extra question. Your dad could probably even tell you what the question is because I think he listens occasionally. It's always the same first question. So, Clark, what is your favorite movie?
Oh, my God.
Your dad would have warned you ahead of time that it was coming.
I should have given you a heads up.
Favorite movie. So, I'm a superhero action kind of guy. So it's definitely superhero movie. Dark Knight, awesome movie.
Okay. Love
the right? Yeah.
It's your choice.
Dark Knight. I like Captain America: Winter Soldier a lot.
Okay. Has your dad ever shown you Superman?
I've watched some of it. I'm more a Marvel guy.
No, but there's nothing wrong with being a Marvel. Okay. You're a Marvel guy. Your dad should have shown you the original Captain America film. And he knows what I'm talking about.
1970s?
Yes. No, there's a 1980s. An 80s one where he fights the Red Skull and it's in Italian. It's pretty bad. I'm just saying, your dad will show you Superman and show you how music is done perfectly.
You know the composer too, who did the Superman.
It's a Star Wars guy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
John Williams.
Yeah.
Okay, Clark, you're both going to get this question, so be prepared. Your favorite movie monster?
Like creature, like.
You can decide. Yeah, I wouldn't. Okay. I don't think this person would be human. This thing would be human. It's a movie about vampires. Vampire, well, Frankenstein, mummy. Jason,
in particular, I'm going to go first.
Is a zombie.
Wait, I think I have...
Thing.
Yeah, Thing is great. There's a good... we talking the original Thing or the John Carpenter Thing?
John Carpenter's.
Yeah, I'm going to challenge you guys.
Yeah, no, I know. You go for... We had a whole conversation about to be or not to be, I believe, last time.
Yes, we did.
And John Carpenter's The Thing. I mean, that is just... That's something of nightmares. Oh, and if you're thinking about a monster, that's a monster to me.
I 100% agree with you.
You know what I thought you were going to say? I thought you were going to say Ghostbusters. Like the
Marshmallow?
Oh, Marshmallow Man or Gozer?
The green...
Oh, Slimer.
Yeah, Slimer.
Slimer's fun. Slimer.
I thought you were going to say... Because I know you love Ghostbusters.
I do love Ghostbusters.
Like that whole car.
We grew up touring it. Your dad's probably a little bit younger than me.
Meeting Dan Aykroyd and being absolutely starstruck, gobsmacked, couldn't open my mouth. And my wife leaned over and goes, "Mr. Aykroyd, I'm sorry. He's a big fan." I can tell. And then,
okay, side note, I've met Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, have you?
And
see,
Bill Murray,
I never met Bill Murray.
Exactly what you expect him to be.
Sure.
What he is in Ghostbusters is what he's like in real life.
It's awesome.
And I'll leave it at that.
So, what's your favorite monster?
Favorite monster? I mean, like, favorite monster in general, I really like, for some reason, I don't know, I really like, like, the three-headed dog from, like, Harry Potter and stuff. That's
just fine?
That's, like, a monster, but, like, I like all, like, mutated like regular animals for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, look,
like, broad.
So sometimes like in like things like I've watched the Percy Jackson series, there's like many of those things. I like more like animals that you think are gonna be like, "Oh, come here," and then they're like, "Ah," like that kind of stuff.
Are you gonna show him Cujo yet?
He could. I actually, you know, at being 12 years old, as we discussed, we did our first R-rated movie.
Oh, good.
Leading up to Deadpool, so he watched Deadpool 1, 2, and 3, and those were his first three R-rated movies.
There's just a lot of swearing, that's all. Just a lot of bombs. Okay, since your lovely family, half of it, has gone to see Taylor Swift, I figured I should bring up something about Taylor Swift.
Shoot.
Your favorite Taylor Swift song, because I know your dad has one. For sure, because he's a musician. I don't know about you, Clark. I don't know if that's too cool for school for you, and I'll accept if you pass.
What is your...
I'll let you go first.
You'll let me go first?
So, all right. Shake It Off. It's nice and simple. It's a good beat.
I know your probably dad's not the most... guy.
So I'm an orchestra kid. I play the upright bass, and in orchestra we played Bad Blood. So I'm gonna go with Bad Blood.
Fair enough. Since I'm dying to go to Long Island now, I gotta ask about restaurants. And it can be a chain restaurant. I will accept that. What is your favorite restaurant to go to? Where's your go-to place?
I'm trying to think of stuff that wouldn't be in Canada.
I know one in particular that happens to be in Massapequa. My go-to place is Krish's.
Oh, I love Krish's.
Yeah.
One in the world.
There's one in the world. There's only one here. And Krish's is basically a 1950s diner. Basically.
Oh, I love it. Like I love it.
Parlor.
They make their own ice cream there. Oh, they make their own chocolate there. Oh. Like you go and you have your dinner, and they have burgers and whatever else that you can normally get in a diner.
They have the best waffle fries.
Best waffle fries. And come to Massapequa and go to Krish's. Wow, what a such a good food. And then you get your homemade chocolates as you leave, and you have a little snack for later.
Okay, Clark, I'm in a good mood. I'm going to give you one bonus question just for you.
Bonus.
You're 12 years old.
Yes.
And your dad's going to download this and put this away for you, I'm sure, somewhere. When you're listening to this in 10 years, what would you like to tell your 22-year-old self?
So I'm in, like, college then, probably.
I would hope so.
Hopefully I'm in college by then. So something I currently would tell my 22-year-old self?
Don't forget blank, so you will always remember it.
This podcast.
Your dad will download it and have it here for infinity. I'm not worried about the podcast.
Don't forget to, like, stay yourself. Like, because, like, I don't want to get to a point where it's, like, I'm up there. And especially within, like, acting industries. Like, some people get, like their entire persona ruined sometimes because they stay in character too often. But just stay yourself. Don't try to make
yourself. So you're not going to be Daniel Day-Lewis? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I honestly have no clue who that is. I'm going to be honest.
Your dad's laughing so hard because he knows exactly why I went with that statement.
Wait, who is that?
Okay, Clark.
We'll talk later.
I'm going to give you some tiny homework. Just a little bit of homework. If you come back on the show, you have to have done your homework. I want you to watch Frankenstein.
Thanks.
That's all I ask. It's an hour and maybe it's not even an hour. Hour and 10, hour and 20 minutes, I think, barely. And I want you to give me what you think of that.
All right.
That's all I'm asking. Just the first one. There is three of them. You can even watch the second one. And third one's not as good, but you're more than welcome. But I want a full theory on Frankenstein. And don't worry, I will remember I gave you homework. Maybe a year from now, but I will remember. Because I will. Because your dad tells you, I remember weird things. So
yeah,
before we let you guys go, Clark, would you like to sign us out tonight and tell everybody where they can find your dad's work?
Sure. Yeah. I'm so lost. So
can you go watch Seymour the Unfortunate
Vampire? You can go watch Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire on
Prime Video. And see you in it.
And see me in it. And see him as Seymour. And
director's cut.
And director's cut. They're
both on Prime. I don't know anything about them, so.
They're both on Prime Video, and then you could like check out like HecklerCaneCreations.com and stuff.
HecklerCane.com.
HecklerCane.com. Sorry.
HecklerCane.com
to like find all information about like the movies and stuff. So.
And merch.
And
you can find that all at HecklerCane.com. Yeah. And all of our social links are there.
Thank you. Have a great evening, guys. Hope you had fun.
Take care. Thanks for having us back.
Thank you.